You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Line at the End of the Street podcast. My name is Tom Jenkins, and today I'm joined by LOV's answer to Posh Spice and Beck's, Will Jones and James Jarvis. I'll let you two decide which of you is which. Whilst everyone has been sadly stuck at home for the last couple of months, we've all been busier than ever, recording podcast after podcast with lots of special guests, all of whom I thank for their time, and I hope you guys have really enjoyed listening to their stories. Today, we're fortunate enough to bring you another special show with a former Wanderers left-back who made 87 appearances for the club over our last 3 years as a Premier League team. He was known for his no-nonsense defending and perhaps even more so for his enthusiastic celebrations. Please welcome Paul Robinson. Paul, thank you for coming on the show. I trust you've been keeping well whilst being stuck at home.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's been good. It's been really good. The fact is that obviously I've not had this time with my kids for quite a long time. It's been nice. It's just been nice to switch off and enjoy that family time that I've really missed over the years playing football.
Yeah, I was going to say, obviously, they'll be keeping you very busy and you get to spend a lot more time with them. Since retiring Birmingham, was it in 2018, what have you been up to since then? Have you been doing coaching or anything like that?
Yeah, well, since I retired, I went straight into the coaching. So Gary Monk was the manager of my first year. Then I went straight into an assistant manager as the 23s coach. And then this year now, I'm now the under-18s manager. So, yeah, okay. I've had no break really, which can be quite full on for 24 years. But no, I mean, I love it. I love my job. I love what I do. And I wanted to stay in the game as much as I could, especially helping the youngsters now. Is you're trying to help them with the mentality side of football. It's been nice having this break because it breaks up a little bit.
Yeah, it must be very pleasing for you to see some young players come through and make their debuts for the first team. Jude Bellingham obviously comes to mind. He must be fantastic to work with.
Yeah, Jude was, he was exceptional when, obviously, 23s level, you're expecting a kid at 15 not really to be up to the expectations of playing against bigger boys, competing. And he was standout. Some games you wouldn't recognise that he was 15 years old. So to see him develop, to see what he's doing now is no surprise to me. And I can only see him getting better.
Has it been difficult for you at times to sort of keep him grounded, given he has such fantastic ability?
No, he's a grounded lad. He's got a great family around him who keep him level-headed. The boy himself is so down to earth. You wouldn't think of what he's done so far. You wouldn't think that the way that he is, because we know what it's like now. Some kids can get a little bit above themselves and get a little bit carried away, but Jude's definitely not one of them boys. And no, he's a real good kid to talk to and a pleasure to be around at times because he's so level-headed.
Yeah, I was going to say, obviously, it must be difficult nowadays with all the money that gets banded around for kids who, you know, 16, 17, etc., to be able to keep them focused on just playing football rather than wanting to get this big Premier League contract and then not actually making it in the game because they're on, I don't know, 15, 20k a week at such a young age. It must be good to have you there as a coach who has been there, seen it, done it, being able to impart that kind of advice to make sure that they don't lose sight of what the actual goal is.
Yeah, obviously, you're always there for him. But if he needs your help, you're not constantly on it him or pushing him and asking him loads of questions, because I feel that these boys sometimes have to find out their own way. They have to make their pathway their own. And I can only give them a little bit of guidance that will help them at certain points. But I think it's, like you say, when these boys get a lot of money thrown at them, it's the boys themselves that have to pick and choose their friends. They have to listen to their family members. They don't need agents. It's their choices. It's what they have to do. And for me, the little information you give them sometimes is the best, just because they have to find their own feet and work it out themselves sometimes.
Yeah, you were at Birmingham, I think, maybe when Ravel Morrison was there. I think maybe as a lone player. He's the one that comes to mind who sort of saw the dazzling lights and maybe went off the rails. Is he sort of like a cautionary tale that you would use for these kids?
Yeah, I mean, Ravel would be a key example of, I mean, what a player.
Ludicrously talented. I think I've come up against him in like a five-a-side thing in and around Manchester, and it was terrifying to watch.
Yeah, I mean, even when you hear quotes from like Rio Ferdinand and Wayne Rooney, it just says it all. I mean, they've worked with him, they've trained with him, I've played with him, I've trained with him, and the kid had so much ability, it's scary. And it's just them fine margins of what you do off the pitch that can kill your career a little bit. And Ravel's definitely one of them because he does let his emotions go a little bit, and the friends maybe around him don't help him as much as what he'd like, but You can't do that. You can't help Ravel in them situations. He has to help himself. But what a player he could be! It's a joke. He's scary. Well beater. He could be a well beater.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, you say it's a dreadful shame. You've had first hand experience with him, and we've all seen what he could possibly do. And it's just a shame that, you know, he's gone the way he is. Maybe now that he's at Sheffield United and Chris Wilder, he may well, you know, make a bit of a step up. Obviously, sidetracked a little bit there, Paul, but I'm very pleased that we sort of got to find out a bit more about what you've been getting up to at Birmingham. Your career, obviously, you played for Bolton for some time, but it's almost like there's been an intrinsic link in your career with the club, even when you weren't playing for them. Starting, of course, with the playoff final win with Watford that happened against us that season. Given it was only your third year at senior level and your second promotion, that must have been an incredible day for yourself to be involved in, even if it wasn't so for fans of our club.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was. It was an unbelievable feeling. Young kid going to the old Wembley Stadium in front of massive amounts of supporters. A dream come true. Like, obviously, my hometown. So to go out Wembley and get the result that we did, obviously, it was a great achievement for us on the day. Yes, I mean, I think we were Bolton's bogey team throughout the season because we beat you twice as well, home and away, I think. Or did we draw? I think we drew at your place and then we won at our place. I can't remember. But yeah, we seemed to be your bogey team. But we knew when we walked into the tunnel, we sort of knew, standing aside from the players, we had that edge straight away. The Bolton players looked more nervous.
That's interesting you say that, though, because you obviously just got promoted. So you were gunning for two promotions in 2 years, and we'd just come down from the Premiership. So you'd have thought, from a bookie's perspective, we'd be the team that you'd expect to win that game. But as you say, you must have gone into there pretty confident, given that you seemed to have one over on us.
Yeah, we felt real confident, and you could sense it. You could sense that Bolton obviously knew that we were quite a difficult team to play against, and you know, when sometimes you're standing next to certain people and you recognise that maybe they're a little bit nervous, they're a bit anxious about which way it could go. And we, as a group of players, we sensed it in the tunnel going out. And as we were walking down to queue up in the lines to shake hands, we all said to ourselves, they're not up for this today. Like, we can get this here. We get the first goal and we're going to rock them. And it did. It just sort of gave us a little bit of a lift kicking off the game. And it just went from strength to strength. We felt like we got a lot fitter during the game, and we were a lot more better on the ball than Bolton. And yeah, surprising because of the quality that was in that team at the time. It was just a real good push for us, and obviously disappointing for Bolton.
I think it's one of those things where there was such pressure on Bolton at the time, given we'd just moved into the new ground, we'd been relegated, and then obviously finances come into it, and you're worried about losing your key players if that doesn't go ahead. From your perspective, given that it was for your second promotion in 2 years and you'd almost kept a very similar squad, you must have just felt as though, you know, you had nothing to lose almost.
No, yeah, because we wasn't the favourites. Bolton, in our eyes, they were the favourites. We're just coming down from the Premier League. I mean, I know that they were more of the favourites to go up automatically, but it didn't happen. And then, yeah, I mean, throughout the season, we were always underdogs. We just got promoted. We kept the same team. We added a few different players to the squad. And we just got stronger as the season went on. And like I say, when you go in with the run into the playoffs, you fancy yourselves because you've got that little bit more confidence going into it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it was a bit of a step too far for Watford, though, going into the Premier League straight away after two seasons in the lower divisions?
Yeah, I think it was, because Watford was a smaller team to what it is now. It's not a lot of players were attracted to Watford, just maybe because of the wage structure as well that Graham Taylor had instilled. He never wanted any egos around the football club. He always wanted players that wanted to come and play for Watford and not just for the money. So We never really attracted a lot of players, really, and we kept the same squad, but we give it our best shot, and it was great learning for everyone. And like you say, players then moved on to playing the Premier League later on in their lives, so that experience helped them then to cope with that in later on in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you say, you sort of moved on from strength to strength yourself, even though you were at Watford for four more years before eventually moving on to West Brom. Going even further along in your career after you'd left the club, one of the other moments where you ended up getting one over on us was the Birmingham City game, final game of the season. That must have been one of the most ridiculous things to be involved in. We certainly know what a great escape looks like. So from a playing side, it must have been great for you.
Yeah, I mean, flip me, being like yous being 2-0 up and us on looking at the maybe looking at administration if the worst comes to the worst. So to get that lift with the first goal and then to nick the second goal in sort of like nearly added on time it's just an unbelievable feeling. But again, we sort of had the momentum going towards the end of the game, and you could feel the tension in the players, you could feel the atmosphere was electric from the Blues fans. Obviously, the Bolton fans were just probably acting as if like it was just an end of season game and the team was safe and nothing really to play for. So from our perspective, it was the important that we got that equalising goal, or otherwise we were doom and gloom.
Yeah, a 2-0 down, did you have any belief in clawing it back? I suppose it helps, as you say, that Zigic scored almost 2 minutes after Jukovic anyway.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when you reply as quick as you do, it helps, because obviously then you can kick on a little bit more. I think if the game had gone on longer and we hadn't scored, then obviously you're looking at the worst. But yeah, I think the sooner we scored the sort of the first goal from you scoring your second one, it sort of took a little bit more pressure off, and then we grew into the game a little bit better.
Yeah, well, when we talk to Bolton players about the Notts Forest survival a couple of years back, one of the big things they talk about is how there's always that motivation of getting new contracts and not losing, you know, all the players in the squad. Financial issues are always the kind of thing that people talk about when it comes to relegation. Was there that added pressure on the Birmingham City players that day to either get contracts or to not, you know, cause the club any financial worries?
I wouldn't look at it that like I wanted to earn a new contract. For me, it's a... You look at the big picture, it's the club, it's survival, it's the people that work behind the scenes who work hard on a daily basis to keep the club the way it does. The people at the ground who marketing and all their little bits, the cleaners. So you look at them people that have to pay mortgages, have to keep their jobs, have to come into work with a smile on their face. So it's that added pressure of having to try and win the game and having to try and survive to help those people survive as well.
Yeah, well, that's one of the... You could sense the relief almost. I think that's what it is. Whenever there's a survival, there's obviously the elation of the goal going in, as there is any time you score. But yeah, the just sheer relief that you could see from the players on the pitch and the fans, I think from our perspective, as you said, because it didn't really affect us, it was just one of those things that you were almost quite pleased that you were there to be able to witness.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was an unbelievable feeling. I mean, the scenes at the end were just incredible. You'd think you just won the league the way that we were celebrating. That's what it felt like. But that's the fine margins of football. It's that getting that equaliser, or it could be you're on your knees like crying your eyes out, and the fans they're booing and throwing things at you. It's just one of those things that happens, isn't it? You either live and die by the sword of what we say in football, and you've got to make them moments count. And we did on that day. We ended up getting an equaliser, and we ended up surviving by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, being involved in it ourselves, we know what the feelings are like. And I think it's just one of those memories that you sort of hold on to for a while. But
definitely.
Right, finally, moving on at last from times you got one over on Bolton, because anyone who's listening to this will be shouting at me to move on to more positive things. Yeah. Taking you back to the start of your career with the club, you joined initially on loan from West Brom after they'd been relegated. Was the plan always for you to sign permanently, or was it more like a try before you buy situation?
Yeah, it was a difficult transfer in the end, because I was supposed to be signing. Well, I had medicals at Sunderland and Wigan, and they fell through just because I failed a medical because I got no ACL in my right knee.
It's a typical Bolton. Then you were clearly one of the people, you know, similar situation to everyone else at the club.
ACL for God's
sake. Always the ACL. But I mean, obviously, I'd played with Gary Megson at West Brom anyway, so he knew me. He knew what type of character I was. He knew that I could probably add something different to the squad with the quality that was in the squad anyway. So for me, it was a no-brainer to travel up and have chats and look round. And Gary sold it to me straight away. And obviously, I looked at the squad with the likes of Kevin Davis, Gav McCann was there at the time, Gary Cahill, exciting players that you've got there to work with. For me, it was a no-brainer. So I wanted to sign for Bolton. Obviously, the loan deal was a bit of a it was between both clubs that they'd agreed that. I don't know why.
It seemed odd at the time that you wouldn't just be a permanent signing, given, you know, from moving up to the Championship to the Premiership. And as it turned out, it was going to be made permanent anyway. I wondered why they sort of dilly-dallied to begin with.
Yeah, I think it was just until the January transfer window. I think they'd agreed in principle to pay a fee, which was then done and agreed. So that sort of clears your mind a little bit, because when it's a loan, you don't know whether it's going to get cancelled or West Brom are going to call you back. You're not too sure with the contract, really, with how it worked. I was just delighted to get it signed and sealed in the end.
Was there any worry coming round the first time, though? Because when you were joining in, you'd have to compete with the likes of Ricardo Gardner and J. Lloyd Samuel, who were both different type of left-backs to yourself. Was there any worry that you might not be able to get a place when you first joined?
Well, no, because for me, you've got to earn your place. So the signs for me were, as I was joining a great squad of players, I had to earn my right to get into the team. I had to train as hard as I could to please, even though I knew Gary Megson, it didn't matter. I still had to get in front of people like Ricardo and J. Lloyd Samuel, because, yes, they were my competition, but it was for me to go out and perform and to prove to the manager that I was better than them two.
What was Gary like as a manager, Paul? Because he obviously had a very divisive relationship with the fans.
He's nuts. He was proper nuts.
But I'm glad you admit it.
Yeah, I love working with him just because he understood me and I understood him. Yes, we had our little ding-dongs every now and then, but that was part of football. Gary was Gary. He'd say how it was. It was black and white. There was no confusion between it. You understood it. You either got on with it or you could sulk and he'd just leave you out and wouldn't worry about you. So I love working with Gary.
Did he ever confide in you about the negativity from the fans and how it affected him, given, you know, he was almost like a trusted lieutenant of his?
No, because Gary kept quite a few things to his chest. He was a bit of a closed book to them, that side of him. Obviously, on a footballing side, regards to talking would be my game, my positioning, like working with players on the pitch and things like that. That was Gary's work, but he never really confided in any of the players about the situation with the fans or whether there was any issues. He tended to deal with that off his own back.
Yeah, obviously, you know, you're part of the team. You know when the team's not doing well. You know, it's always the players that get booed, but then the manager also cops quite a lot of the flack. Did it seem inevitable to the squad that he was going to end up losing his job, given that it almost became untenable, his position, because fans just were going to start protesting and just not going at one stage?
Yeah, I think as a manager and as a player, I think you know your time's up when you've done that all you can at a football club, and it's time for a fresh challenge and to move on. I think that they're the right times to leave then. Obviously, Gary had found it tough towards the end with, yes, as we weren't getting the results that we were deserving. But at the same time, as players, we have to hold our hands up and take responsibility that if you're not performing, then as a player, you've got to take that. You've got to take the criticism. You've got to take that you're not doing your job for the team, and you've got to take being dropped at certain points and try and fight and get back into the team. So yeah, from Gary's point of view, I would assume that he found it enough was enough, and he didn't want the stress anymore in his life, where he felt it was time for him to move on and leave the club.
Do you think it was fair? Go on.
I was just going to say, at any point did you feel the same? Similar question to what Tom was going to ask. At any point did you feel as if he lost the dressing room as well, as much as he lost the fans?
The dressing room, the lads always took it out. Like we always went for each other in dressing rooms, because you have to. If your performance is not good enough, you've got to let each other know. Football's changed now. So football's changing. You don't hear a lot of opinions. You don't hear a lot of players telling each other that they've done that wrong or they've let that person down, because they take too many things to heart. But when you're in the dressing room with what I was in, with great characters and leaders, you've got to take it. So as players, we knew we weren't performing. So we dug each other out and we tried to do the right things. And sometimes the manager, you try and take the pressure off the manager by constantly telling you what you're doing wrong.
Did you ever feel like he was insistent that it was never his fault, or was he quick to hold his hands up at all, did you feel? Or
No, Gary was always one that held his hands up. He always accepted that he might have made wrong tactical decisions. He might have made the wrong errors in players with the game that we were playing in. He understood that. He was always hands up. It's my fault.
Fair enough.
I find that interesting because it's not really what came across to us. I was relatively young at the time, but I remember the Hull City game, which was the last one that he took charge of, and there was this visceral reaction towards him taking Klasnic off at 2-1 maybe to put on Gavin McCann to try and shore up the result. And I think it was that over-cautious side that really sort of grated with the fans, because obviously under Allardyce, there'd been an element of stability. He tried to be really, really solid. But yeah. I think with Gary, it came across as it was just a bit too negative.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And that comes under pressure as well. With a manager, it's... when things are not going well and you just want that result to give you a little bit of a lift, it does. Managers make decisions that sometimes you think, well, why is your assistant not helping you out with that one? Do you know what I mean? That's when you need staff around you to be nice and solid with you and make the right decision and say, no, Gary, I think you're making the wrong decision here in bringing Ivan off. I just think there's always that added pressure of the decision-making will always look a little bit more difficult to when you're sitting in the crowd and being on the touchline with being that manager. It's making that decision and it's firm, right, I'm sticking by it and now I've done it.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like damned if you do, damned if you don't almost. Your move was made permanent by Owen Cole after he arrived and replaced Gary Megson. Obviously, you haven't worked with Owen before, but how much of a confidence boost was it for him to put his faith in you like that and sign you up almost immediately?
It was a good one because I just wanted it signed, sealed and delivered, but I think Gary had agreed it. So I think Gary had agreed everything with Phil. And when obviously Gary had left, then Owen obviously knew that I was signing. So
fair enough, okay.
He had no qualms in that anyway. I think Owen had seen me over the years as what type of player I was and what he expected off me. It just flowed nicely.
Mm-hmm. How did the styles of management differ? Because we've spoken to quite a few players on this and they said they were almost chalk and cheese.
Yeah, Owen's very off the cuff compared to a lot of managers that I've worked with. And you do find it, well, I was bemused by some of the decisions and some of the things that he did. But
one of them involve table tennis?
Table tennis, snooker, darts. I think it was just like a pub games we used to play all the time. I think it was, and you couldn't get your head around it. Some days I was just, is this professional football? Sometimes it, but that was Owen. Owen was that eccentric type of guy, type of manager who he lived on the edge. I just looked at him as he always lived on the edge, and he took things differently to other managers that I worked with.
Was it sort of, would you think it was sort of like fostering a good team spirit? Was that sort of like one of the things that he tended to champion?
Oh, I think we had a good team spirit. I don't think Owen could ever question or could ever manifest with what we had there, because when you got people like Sean Davis in the squad, you got people like Kevin Davis, Zach Knight, so many characters, Ivan Klasnic, Stu Holden. I mean, what a group of players we had. It was scary. It was like, and you had like the quality of Jack Wiltshire to that as well at the time. Like real good characters who come into the group, and we just had a real buzz around the training ground. Everything was fun. It was like going to work with like 20 of your mates.
Yeah, we spoke to Ivan on the podcast and he talked about some of the dressing room pranks that went on. Was that something you always got involved in?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, I love all that sort of stuff. It like you say, it keeps the togetherness. It keeps the team spirit. If you're seen as someone that's obviously not getting involved, or you don't want to be doing that, you don't want to be seen doing that, then you obviously weren't felt welcomed at the football club. But at the time, it was just everyone was involved in everything. It was a different prank from a different player all the time. It was constant, so it was brilliant.
Yeah, he talked about one that you did, and I'll try and phrase it as nicely as possible. Were you left a present on the training room floor for someone to walk in and find? Is that fair to say, Paul?
that was quite funny, that one.
we'll say no more. If you want to find out the true story, listen to Ivan's podcast.
Yeah, Klaz is a character. He was like a whirlwind of gold. He was comical, Klaz, and I loved my time with him. He went through some real tough times as well with his kidney. To see the way that he performed in the week and the way he played and the character that he was, he was such a good guy to be around on a daily basis.
It's amazing to see how, you know, well, as you say, he played, given, you know, the medical struggles that he's had off the pitch, maybe 4 transplants or something like that. Just how good was he? And also Lee Chong-yong, he was a new player coming in at the same time as you, who added a lot of quality.
Yeah, oh my God. I mean, what a player Chong-yong was. I mean, again, Klaz, I'd never heard really too much about Ivan. But when you see him in training, it just goals, pure goals from anywhere. Just he naturally knew where the goal was. He'd have his back to goal. He'd turn and he knew it was there. And then you've got Lee Chong, Fitme. I mean, what a player he was. He was insane. Some of the skills, the ability that he had, the way he went past players, scary. I mean, so good for the team. I mean, the fans loved him. You could see the fans had an instant bond with Chong-yi just because of the way he was, not only as a person, but as a player.
Yeah, I think it's always the thing with Bolton fans where they don't just focus on the technical ability, but also are very, very into players who always give 100%. And I think that was what sort of set Chong-yi apart. And also yourself, Paul, you know, putting in all that effort consistently week in, week out is something that wins you a lot of friends.
Yeah, no, I loved it. I always feel that every club you sign for, you've got to give you all, no matter... There will be times I struggled at Bolton. There were definitely times where I struggled. I found it hard settling in to start with, obviously, because my family was still in Birmingham, travelling. So, yeah, all them little things come into consideration. But the 3 years that I was there overall, I absolutely loved it. I loved my time there. It was just a shame the way it all ended for me. It was disappointing.
Yeah. Going into the 2010-11 season, obviously you get the additions of Martin Petrov, Stu Holden, suddenly he's starting to make more waves in the team. Was the squad as a whole confident of avoiding a relegation scrap, given that that's what you'd been involved in the previous year?
Well, yeah, because when you look at the players that are coming through the door, you're expecting high expectations. Mm. Obviously, it was going to take time for us to gel as a team, especially when Martin Petrov left Man City. We know what he'd done there for them. So him now to come over to Bolton, obviously, was not a big drop for him, but a change. So a change in style of football, a change.
Did you like playing with him, Paul?
And no. Yes and no. The fact is that I knew that if you give him the ball, he could be dangerous. And no, because of the fact is that every time I overlapped him, I knew that he wouldn't run back for me. Whereas when I played with Taylor, we had a connection on the left-hand side.
Whereas, yeah, I was going to ask you that, whether or not Matty Taylor was sort of like because obviously he'd been a defender earlier in his career, would that sort of help you from a work rate perspective?
Yeah, so I always look at the connections in football teams is the important, the linking together as a partnership. And me and Matty had that down the left-hand side is when we played well together. I mean, we were unstoppable down the left-hand side. But when I felt I played with Martin, it was a hot and cold relationship where you never knew what you were going to get from Martin. And some games I felt that I played horrendous just because of the fact is I was caught out positionally because I wasn't being helped by Martin, or I'd made a run and he never gave me the ball and then I was out of position. So I knew, but in my head as a player, I knew I should have just stayed. I should have just stuck to my position and done my job instead of trying to be expansive and trying to do the things that I thought would help in the team out. I knew that they weren't, and we were getting cut open, and it was disappointing. And I should have known better as a player to do that at the time.
I find that very interesting because I've always been a fan of Martin Petrov, and you know, unashamedly so. But you know, I have a conversation with these two lads, and Will's a big Matty Taylor fan, and James has always said that he thought that Petrov sort of shirked quite a bit of the defensive responsibility. So I presume from your perspective, lads, this is music to your ears.
I was always saying that Martin Petrov, for lack of a better word, I always thought he was a bit lazy. Undeniable ability, but I always said he was way too lazy, and it would kept costing us in games, especially in that in our relegation season 2011-2012.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like when you look at it, would you want a Matty Taylor in that team or would you want a Martin Petrov when things are not going well?
100% every time.
I'd want a Matty Taylor.
Yeah, absolutely. Classic player. And I just think that your relationship with him, you know, on the field, and it seemed to work off the field just as well. You know, it was quite obvious at that time that the team seemed to have a really good relationship. You know, obviously going forward on and off the field. So it was really good to see. And like Tom says, I'm a huge admirer of Matty. So, you know, to see you two linking up so well as you did was a real spectacle for me. So
yeah, it's great. I love me and Matty still speak now, so we're close friends, and we had a great relationship down the left hand side. And again, Owen's got to take responsibility for that, because he broke that up and he wanted to change it. And I just think if it's not broken, then it doesn't need changing.
No, absolutely.
One of the key changes that was made to that side, obviously I mentioned him before, was Stuart Holden coming into that engine room in the midfield with him and Fabrice Wamba seemed to have a fantastic partnership. Did it sort of make your job easier as a defender, given that you knew that in both going forward and defensively, those two could share quite a lot of the work rate?
Oh, yeah, massively. I mean, Stu as well on the ball was, he was a fantastic ball player. You knew that you could give him the ball, he could control the game, calm it down, pick the right passes. I knew then that my time into my runs would be so much better, because I knew if he had the ball at his feet, then he'd either find me or he'd find a more of a secure pass where we weren't going to give it away. And him and Fabrice, they just bounced off each other with their energy. I mean, they both were like midfield box-to-box players where they covered loads of grass, put tackles in for the team. It was a real good balance in midfield with them two. And Stu, again, another great lad, both of them, Fabrice as well, both great lads in the changing room as well.
Yeah, well, it'd be remiss to talk about Stu without talking about one of the highlights of that season, which was the Blackburn game, of course. And you were heavily involved in the celebrations, as we've seen on your wall. It's sort of immortalised on the internet as well. I think the reason why that is so remembered well is because of the real passion that it showed from yourself. But I presume your memories of the day are just almost a blur, really.
Yeah, I mean, flip me, what did we have? 10 men, didn't we? We had 10 men.
I think Sparky got sent off, if memory serves.
Yeah, 10 men. Blackburn were sort of cruising 1-0, 1-0. Were they 1-0 up? And then Davo scored, didn't he?
No, I think it was
Fabrice. Yeah, it was just Fabrice scored, and then Juve equalised, and then we got the other end.
And then we got the other end and scored a winner. I mean, I mean, on the day, I thought we played on some unbelievable football, and we demonstrated what a good team we were. But yes, I mean, them two goals just highlighted what we were all about as a group. We never give up. We always were fighting for each other. Always we threw our bodies on the line, and it was a great game. It was on Sky as well, that game, wasn't it? That one.
It was, yeah. One of the most ridiculous moments I've ever seen. That you've never seen someone go from so deflated to such a massive high straight away.
Yeah, and then the celebrations just there. It was a great picture, well captured by the photographer, but it was just. You're thinking in the air, what am I doing? I'm running towards them. I'm thinking, what am I going to do? And I just decided to jump. Obviously, it looked like I was doing the Superman, but then my face is in shock because I'm realising I'm actually not going to land on them here. I'm jumping over them.
So it's a wonder you didn't injure anyone with that frost.
I was literally going to say, I was terrified you were going to injure somebody.
Yeah, so I was more worried about how I was going to land. That was my worry.
It reminded me of the Jimmy Bullard thing. I remember seeing that sort of goal line scrap on Twitter the other day, and Jimmy Bullard just jumping over the top of everyone for a laugh. It just reminded me of that. It was fantastic.
Brilliant, mate. Sorry, my dog's just going mad. Hang on, fellas. Hang on. Kick him out, lads. I'm kicking him out. Sorry.
This is why James here, Paul, so we can do all the editing.
It was just like the Jimmy Bullard one, wasn't it? But that was the best one when flipping. I like Duncan Ferguson just staring at him. That was the best bit.
Yeah, and there was that little lean afterwards that you did with Stuart. I can't remember what he said. What was that in reference to again?
Were we taking a mick out of someone stretching?
Oh, it was Tony.
Tony the kit man used to do like this weird stretch. So me and Stuart obviously said, if one of us is scoring, we're doing this celebration. So, yeah, he'd do the stretch and he'd fall over because he couldn't get his balance right. So we just, as soon as Stu scored, we just like both looked at each other. We went, yes, this is a great time to do it.
Yeah, I think Stu recorded by saying Tony was a bit of heavier set. I think if he'd have tried to do a Superman on someone, then it would have been a full squad injury. But, you know.
He definitely would have squashed a few people.
One of the other great memories of that season, Paul, is obviously the fantastic FA Cup run. How was that to be involved in, especially the Birmingham game, which you had a hand in that winning goal from Chungi?
Yes, unbelievable run. I mean, it's the best cup, isn't it? It's a special cup to play in. And to get as far as we did as a group of players was unbelievable. But like you say, it's it all got dampened by the result at Wembley. So that was the most disappointing thing about it, was the way that we let ourselves down at Wembley.
What is your memory of that Stoke defeat?
Just horrendous. Just as a group together, we never performed. Me myself personally, I never got into the game. Didn't feel comfortable throughout the game. Just one of those days where nothing ever was going to go right for you, no matter how hard you tried. You just felt everything was coming down on top of you. It's football. Unfortunately, these things happen in football. I mean, flip me, I've had an 8-0 against Bournemouth for Birmingham as well. So I've had a few big hitters over my career. But it's how you deal with them. And I remember then that the next time we played Stoke, we beat them 5-0. So
that was a good day. That was a very good day.
It's those things where... But after that, we beat Arsenal 2-1 at home, didn't we? So
yeah, Tammy got the last minute goal.
It's just football and the way it goes, unfortunately, and it is. Yeah, it's just the kicking the balls, because you are. Yeah, it's disheartening. I was going to say,
I still have nightmares myself about Matty Etherington, and I don't know whether he was down your side that you were up against. I can't remember whether he was playing on the left or the right that day, but I can imagine your nightmares of it are even worse than mine.
I had Jermaine Pennant down my side. Matty was he against Greta?
Yeah, he would have been on the left.
I think it would have been.
He was on the left. I mean, both of them on the day. When you look at both them wingers, if you don't give them a yard, you got on top of them. But if you give them time and space, they're the most dangerous wingers you can ever come up against in the Premier League, just because of how good they are. And on a big pitch against them two players on the day, they just both killed us, both me and Greta. I think they both just got the better of us each time.
Can you explain it, Paul? Is there anything that leading up to the game that maybe gives you some kind of clarity as to why it happened? Because it just came from absolutely nowhere.
No, you can't. I just think when you're on the football pitch and you're in your zone, if I'm marking someone like a Ronaldo, I know for a fact I've got to be on top of my game. Because if I'm not on top of my game, then Ronaldo's going to run me ragged all game, just because of how good he is. And I just felt Jermaine Pennant, you never know which type of Jermaine Pennant you're going to get. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure. So in my head now, I've confused myself with going against Jermaine Pennant. Right, I need to be doing this, and this, because if I'm not, then he's going to get on top of me. And I remember it. I made a mistake in about the first 5 minutes against him. I tried to have another touch and he took it off me. And then it got in my head. So in my head then, I was thinking, why am I taking too many touches? Because I know he's quick off the mark. And I know if I'm going to have another touch, he's going to come on top of me. And I did in the end. I was then having too many touches and he was encroaching on me, and he just kept taking it off me. So it was just one of those. It was just a bad day, just a real bad day.
Just the occasion overwhelming, as I think, as well. You know, obviously, Wembley and everything. I think everything just culminates into that one moment where I think, you know, heads potentially just lost for a minute one, and it seems to that being the case. But
it doesn't help that in like the first 10 minutes, you had Etherington and Huth both take pot shots and they both flew in. I mean, how to kill confidence? Yeah. It just seemed like everything went their way.
Yeah, and that's it. Football on the day, whichever way it goes and whichever luck. I mean, like you say, you never see goals conceded like that by Yussi as well. He's normally pretty solid in goal. But it's just, again, it was Yussi in goal, wasn't it?
It was.
And you look at Yussi and you think, shit, I can't even shout at him because he's such a good goalkeeper and he never makes them type of mistakes. So... it's just one of those things, unfortunately. But yeah, you get all that way. The fans pay all that money. The fans travel down from afar to go to Wembley. Big day out for the fans, and you end up losing 5-0. It's just you just want the ground to like to bury you, cover you up, and take you away as quick as possible. And yeah, you just have to accept it and hold your hands up and just apologise and then move on.
At least how hard was it to recover?
Sorry?
How hard was it to recover as a squad, do you think? Did it affect you mentally for a while afterwards?
I think it took a little bit of a knock-on effect in the week, because we never knew what was coming. And at the same time, we knew Arsenal were coming up on the next weekend. And again, that was on Sky. So we just realised that we had to knuckle down and we had to pull our finger out and just accept that it's over. The game's gone. There's nothing we can do about it. And we have to look forward to the next game and how we're going to bounce back.
Yeah, it just seemed that, as you say, you know, ridiculous to then bounce back and beat Arsenal. We played them off the park that day. You know, Kevin obviously missed a penalty, so it could have been even more of a comfortable scoreline.
Yeah.
But then you have five losses in the last five games of that season. It just seemed from a fan's perspective that maybe it was quite a difficult monkey to get off your back.
Yeah. It's always tough. It is always tough when you get a result and knock you back. So yeah, results like that, obviously. They do. They affect your performances, but they also affect you as a team as well, because obviously certain teammates are then looking at you and they think differently of you compared to what they thought of you before when things were going well.
Mm-hmm. The following season obviously started with a 4-0 win against QPR, and then we went on another poor run, which was not helped, admittedly, by the fact that we were playing, you know, some really, really good sides in that opening sort of month or so. Did you see that kind of struggle that season coming as a squad, especially after you've just won 4-0 on the opening day?
Yeah, you could see like little cracks appearing with certain players that they didn't want to be there. They wanted the transfer window to get away by the transfer window. Don't know why. I don't like reasonings whether their agents were in their ears or whether other clubs were tapping them up. I don't know. But you just had that feeling that no one really wanted to be there anymore, just because of the fact is I don't know why. I don't know what you could put your finger on it. Maybe some players wanted to change. The manager.
You could feel it, though. You could feel that there was something.
Yeah, you could definitely sense it.
Was there a reason why you suddenly went in and out of the team, having been such a mainstay for the last 2 years?
I'd had a falling out with Owen. Okay. It was that, yeah. I'm not afraid to admit it. We didn't see eye to eye. Even though I respected him as a man, I didn't feel that we were the same team as what we were the previous year when we were close to Europe. We'd done so well. And then towards the end of the season, I think we brought in like young players from Spain, Marcus Alonso and Roddy had come in. Owen sort of put the stamp on the team that maybe was taking away the British side of it that we all felt that was the best way. And it was that we could see things were changing and I wasn't going to be a part of Owen's plan. So, yeah, we didn't see eye to eye in the end, unfortunately.
Was it just you that he had a falling out with, or did he have issues with other players, perhaps?
No, I think there was quite a few fractions with a few players there, but I think you could tell that with the way the team should never have gone down. With that group of players, that team should never have gone down, because you could see that the team spirit had gone. Certain players were playing for themselves and not playing for the club and for playing as a team. And I wasn't even there and I could see that. I was watching the games and I could see the difference in what it was like before and what it was like then. So, yeah, disheartening and sad, really, because Bolton had been at the top. They'd been in the top flight for so long, and it was a great run club by Phil. And unfortunately, he passed away and things started to change. Obviously, money starts getting different towards certain players, and you bring in players who are more worried about their pay packet than they are playing for the football team. And there's a whole lot of things that you could see. And for me, it was disappointing because Bolton should never have gone down that route, and they should still now be in the Premiership if it was kept the way that it was and secure.
I presume you would have liked nothing more than to have stayed and helped in the relegation scrap rather than be sent on loan to Leeds.
100%, yeah, 100%. It was pulling my hair out, not being involved and helping to get stuck in and help the lads. But the manager makes decisions, so you have to respect that and you have to get on with it. So I'm not the type of player to sit around and pick my money up. I want to go and earn the right, and I want to go and play football. And that's the opportunity I was given to go and play at Leeds, again, another fantastic club. So, I jumped at the opportunity to just go and get some game time and enjoy my football again.
Yeah, I think one of the factors that fans always look at is the injuries to Lee Chung-Yong and Stu Holden, and even with Wheats getting injured in the second-to-last game against West Brom and then not being able to play on the final day. That's what we see, but it's interesting to see that you it was more sort of like a squad attitude thing that maybe caused more of the issues than the injuries to those key players.
Yeah, definitely the attitude that let the team down in the end. I mean, Kev Davis was on the bench for the last game as well, wasn't he?
I think towards the end of his time at the club, some of the treatment that Kev had to go through was just an absolute disgrace, to be honest with you.
he's the club captain, he's a leader, he's a legend at the football club, and he's the player that you want seeing leading the team out every week. And when you're not seeing Kevin Davis leading Bolton Football Club out, then there's a problem, there's an issue. And it definitely isn't Kevin Davis. So when I'm looking at that, I'm straight away, I'm looking at my leaders sitting on the bench, and I want my leader on the football pitch.
Yeah, well, I think, as you say, there was a lack of leadership from the top, really, because I think no one really knew quite how to react to it, because it came out of nowhere that we suddenly started to struggle so badly. And yeah. I think you're right. There was obviously a core of players there who were there to do a job for the club, but then also then you have to build your side around them. And yeah. I wonder whether, you know, you brought Tunchai was brought in and didn't have any effect whatsoever. Nigel Riococca came in and did quite well, but, you know, I don't think his head was necessarily in the right place to try and play for Bolton. Mm. So you look at that team, and from a quality perspective, didn't see many problems. But as you say, it's interesting to hear from you that maybe their heads weren't necessarily in the right place, or maybe not kept in the right place by Owen. Maybe that's a management issue. I don't know.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, your manager has to take responsibility, because he has to make the decisions, and whether the decisions were right or wrong at the time, I just felt they were wrong. But that was my opinion. I don't know what anyone else thinks, and I just felt that it could have been done a whole lot better than what it was, and Bolton should never have gone down that year.
100%. I presume there was no chance of you ever renewing your contract as a result?
Well, no, because I remember Phil Gardside was in Portugal the time I was in Portugal in the holidays the year before, and he phoned me while I was away and he said, "Paul, I want to meet you. I want to meet you for a game of golf, and I want you to sign a new contract." And so we met, we played a game of golf, real good time with Phil. I mean, I loved it. I loved his company. He was such a gentleman. He was a real football man. He loved the club through and through. He wanted the best for the football club. And I felt that he wasn't offering me the contract that I deserved. And it was nothing to do with money. It was the length of contract. And I sort of couldn't get my head around it. Was I'd probably played my best football for Bolton in the year that I was in playing. I was really enjoying my football, really enjoying my time. And I felt a little bit of a kick in the teeth that he only wanted to offer me a year. But I also felt that was coming from Owen, and that the manager was obviously not too sure, or he wasn't going to give me any longer. For me, my family was still living in Birmingham, so I needed that security that I needed to move my family up. So that year that I was offered, I just felt, well, I'm just going to see my contract out, because my family's not going to move up just for a year. There's no point.
Was there any talk amongst the players about why those deals didn't necessarily go through? Because I look back at it now and I think maybe money had to be the issue with the likes of Klasnic, Steinsen, etc. Because there was a lot of people let go who shouldn't necessarily have been let go, or maybe didn't even want to go at that point.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I can't speak on their behalf of what their money, what they were on. I never was interested in what they were earning. But again, it might not have had anything to do with money. It might have been other things that might have made them want to leave, or made them want to go for a new challenge somewhere. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Matt Taylor, Jasker Leinen as well left.
Yeah, I mean, all the players that had, they'd gone through the Bolton way and they'd earned the Bolton right, were being let go. That core, that strength, that quality was all being thrown out the door. And I find it bemusing that football clubs can do that, because that's your strength. That's what you have to keep there. You have to keep the team spirit. You have to keep the people there that you know are going to keep the team spirit flowing, and they're going to keep the togetherness. And it for me, it was just looking from the outside, eventually was all the team spirits being broken up.
Yeah, this is just a speculation on my part. But do you think it might have just been a one-year deal for you to maybe keep some semblance of team spirit, as well as just to nurture the younger Marcos Alonso to eventually take your place around the training field and whatnot?
But if you're going to do that, then you obviously get that in your contract. That wasn't... So if a club was going to go to me, right, Robbo, we want you to sign 3 years. On your third year, we want you to do your coaching badges, and we want you to start looking after the younger lads. Then, do you know what? There's your future. There's your plan. So as a player, I've got that in my head. Right, on my third year, I know that I'm not going to play as much, and I'm going to be focusing on developing the young kids with the first team, and I'm going to be helping them try and get on the right pathway to hopefully play for Bolton Wanderers Football Club, which will be the biggest achievement ever, would be knowing that you're bringing through the youth. But if you're, as a football club, if you've not got that plan and you've not got that guidance, then for me, then what's the point in just offering me another year contract, but there's no guarantees that you're going to play me, you're not going to use me for any of the coaching, then that's just a year of, well, I still think I can do a good job. Like, even though 32, I still had plenty of life in me. My legs were good. I felt good as a player. I just felt like a little bit of disrespect and a bit of disregard to obviously the person that I was, and that you didn't want me around the training ground.
It's just not feasible at that stage of your career, I don't think, to be expecting just one more year from you. And like you say about having to move your family logistically, it's simply just not worth it. And whether finance comes into it or not, it just doesn't seem like a sensible move. And I completely understand from your perspective why that was your decision.
Especially when the other offer on the table is Birmingham, literally where your family are.
Yeah, well, I didn't have a contract from Birmingham until the October. So I was,
oh, really? Well, okay.
I was 6 months without a club, yeah. So I was training by myself. So that was difficult. Obviously, I'd left Bolton. Leeds had then, they'd had new targets coming in. I'm not too sure if they were wanting to keep Neil Warnock as well. He was the manager at the time. So there was a bit up and up. Obviously, they was having a transition in their squad with changing, and they lost a lot of players in the summer. So, for me, I was back home with my family, and I was waiting for a move. I went on trial to Notts Forest for 3 weeks, and then that never materialised into a contract just because of the owners. They changed ownership.
Of course they did, because it's Notts Forest.
Yeah, so the owners wanted to bring in their own style of player, and it was weird. That was weird, that was. I mean, I went on trial, and for not only the career I've had, but for the player that I was as well, I didn't mind doing it because it's football. I have to go and prove myself, and I wasn't afraid to do it. But for 3 weeks, I felt like, hold up a minute, you've got me on trial for 3 weeks, and now at the end of the 3 weeks, you've now told me that you want to sign me as a backup player. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that.
Well, we had it at the start of this season, Paul. Obviously, with the different ownership issues, of course. But we were speaking to Jem Karachan yesterday, and he was saying that you had about 5 or 6 players all just knocking around the training ground on trial, quote unquote. But then, of course, that's 4 weeks down the line. The ownership deal's still not gone through, and then you just discarded. And yeah. I think the way that football clubs treat players a lot of the time like commodities, it's something that really needs looking into and altering.
Definitely, 100%. And it's stability. The clubs need stability. Like, if you've got proper owners in there who care about the club and they care about the squad that they want to develop, like, do they want to bring the young lads through? Again, for me, we're not seeing enough of the young players coming through the academies. You've got to start looking at it. You've got to start rebuilding your squads with using the youth as well as the experience that you've got there. Mm-hmm. There's going to be times where you've got to move players on. Yes, it's football. We accept it. As long as that player knows what's happening and how it's going, then if you're treated right as a person, then you shouldn't have any problems. It should flow nicely. But if you're not getting told the right information, you're getting fed false information, then yes, players, their heads are going to be all over the place and they're going to act differently. You've got to have, and owners are going to mess around. They're not going to tell the fans the right information with what's going on or detail. There's going to be uproar. There's going to be conflict. There's going to be friction. Fans are not going to go to the games because the owners are lying to us. Why do I want to go? Like, even though it's hurting you, I'm paying good money to go and watch my football team play, but yet you're not telling us the full story, so I'm not wasting my money going to watch my team play.
Well, you certainly managed to prove them wrong by playing until, was it the age of 39 or 40 almost, when you left Birmingham? So, you know, what's your secret of having such a long career at the top 2 levels of English football?
I just dedicated my life to it. I mean, I loved it. I loved every minute. I loved the fact of proving people wrong that age is just a number, because, again, owners always looked at, you got to 35, you got to 36, oh, his legs have gone. He's well past it. Well, if the owners had watched me in training every day, they'd know for a fact that I wasn't past it and I was probably one of the best trainers every day. So that motivation to shut people up, I just loved it. I loved it all the time, just to prove people wrong and keep them quiet. So, yeah, I always looked after myself, kept healthy, eat the right things, always do yoga. I just love looking after myself and helping the youngsters. I always wanted to prove to the youngsters that it can be done, even at my age, the way I looked after myself. Look, this is how you do it. This is what it's about. If you don't believe in this sort of stuff, then you shouldn't be in football. You shouldn't be looking at, I just want a nice car, I just want to wear nice clothes. Well, no, because that's not going to get you far. It's about dedication and getting your head down and doing the right things. And that's what I wanted to, that's what drove me all the time on a daily basis.
Yeah, you also proved yourself adaptable during that time with Birmingham as well, shifting from a left back to a centre back, which I always thought was quite interesting, considering you're not the tallest defender around as well. How was that adaptation?
Yeah, I felt for the last 5 years of my career, it helped me massively because it saved my running. Because we know at fullback, you got to sprint up and down the line, and at centre half, you don't do as much running. And I could see the bigger picture. I could control the team in front of me. I could talk to them. I could tell them positioning them wise and help them. So yeah, for me, I developed so much playing centre half for 5 years. Just not as a player, but as a person, it brought a lot out in me, in my leadership qualities as well. So yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I think it takes a certain type of player to be able to sort of make the admission to themselves that they're better off at being suited at a different thing as well. I think that's almost like a humble attitude almost, to be able to say, right, maybe this isn't for me anymore, but I know I can dedicate myself to something else and try and be as good as that as well.
Oh yeah, and Lee Clark was a manager at the time, and I remember it, we were playing Hull away and we were getting absolutely pumped about 3 or 4-1 it was, and Stephen Caldwell wasn't feeling very well, and I think he'd woke up in the morning and he declared himself fit, and he was honking. And Lee Clark just turned around to me and went, Rob, are you going on? And I went, like, where? And he went, centre half. And for me, the manager at the time, he had belief in me. So he believed that I could go at centre half and I could play well. And I did. I went in next to Curtis Davis, and we just clicked as a partnership. I read him, he read me, we looked after each other. And I just grew into the game. And from then on, for the last 15 games, I played centre half. And I kept Stephen Caldwell out of the team, and he was the captain. He was the captain of the team, and yeah, me and Curtis played then the last 15 games as centre half partnership. And
I presumed you knew Curtis from West Brom. Had you played with him there as well?
Yeah. So I played alongside Curtis when he was at West Brom. Great player, great character. We, like you say, when you play with players that you played with before, it just makes your job a lot easier because you understand each other.
Yeah, well, like I say, it's certainly worked out for you. And I think, you know, given that you're still at the club, I think that's one of the kind of ways that it's good to be recognised that you're appreciated, given that you're still kept at the club, having played for them, and they've found another role for you now, which you seem to be enjoying quite a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely love helping the youngsters.
Good, good. I think that's sort of all for our like general chat, Paul. I think just before we end this, I'll hand you over to Will for the Twitter questions that we got when we told the fans that you were going to be coming on. And I apologise in advance if there's any rogue ones in there.
I've been used to it for 24 years. Don't worry about it, Will.
Not surprised, mate. I'm not surprised.
We'll try and keep the tongue-in-cheek ones out of it if possible. We'll just stick to the main one. So Mark Potter's asking, what was your favourite Bolton game?
Cool. I think the Man City one at home. We drew 3-3?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That was my first game in after having a spell out the team. And I mean, I was chomping at the bit and I wanted to prove a point. I wanted to like let Bolton, like the fans know, because they didn't really see me properly. And I just wanted to prove a point. And I remember that, like, the first 10, 15 minutes I was against Sean Wright Phillips and I just smashed him. It took him and he went off with a dead leg. And he looked at me when he was going off and he went, like, why, Robbo? And I just went, well, you're there to be taken, Sean, unfortunately. So
that's good selection. Pro, I think, is what they call that.
Yeah. And from then on, I grew into the game after I, because Sean's a great player. I mean, he was such a great player to play against just because he was a test. That every time you played against him, he was a test. And I knew I'd got the better of him that day and my confidence grew. And it was, and for me, then I had a great run in the team. So yeah, I would say that game really gave me a big lift and I loved it. I loved playing that one. And obviously then the Stoke won 5-0 when we beat him at home 5-0.
I'm surprised you didn't say that one because I'd never seen you have so much space in front of you when running forward.
Yeah, I know, and that's what I meant. I meant when I was in full flow and when I was playing at my best, that was when I knew I was in my element, growing as a player and enjoying my game. Was that one?
Oh, good stuff. Both fantastic picks there. I must admit, the City game one particularly is a memorable one. Remember that, definitely. You obviously mentioned that you still sort of have contact with Matt Taylor. Do you keep in touch at all with any of the other old characters?
Yeah, I still text Gary Cahill and Jack Wilkshire, obviously Klaz, Stu Holden, Kev Davis. Every now and then you keep in touch with them. I mean, we've still got our own group chat, so we still got our own group chat. So that's great, because that just showed what a great team spirit we have. Yeah. So when everyone's got something funny to put on the group chat, we do. Even the old staff members, like the old kit men, like Jimmy Barrow and Cliffy, as well, who's at Man City and that now, they're on it as well. So it just shows the togetherness. Robbie Blake, real good characters. Yeah, loved it. Love being around them people. So yeah, still in contact with all them boys that I played with.
You could tell that you got on really well with Stu. He said on the podcast that we did with him that you were the most underrated player that he could pick out from his time at the club. So clearly there was a good relationship there.
Yeah, I love my time with Stu. Like now, we still, like even our partners, Caroline and Cara, Stu's partner, we're still in contact over social media because they're in America, so they're different time zones. So yes, I mean, you keep them friends for life just because of the way that we were together and the way we enjoyed each other's company. Stu, again, for me, he was another one. He was an unsung hero, Stu. He was just such a good player for the team, and he made us click.
He wasn't unsung for us, but maybe unsung around the rest of the Premier League.
Yeah. He could have made it at the top had he not been played by those injuries.
I mean, the injuries, disgusting. I mean, it's just horrendous with what you have to see a player go through on a continuous basis, and to see the way that he kept fighting back and in training. The man's got a strong mentality, and it's just a shame the way it all ended, because if you'd have seen what he did on a daily basis to come back from every injury, you'd cry your eyes out, just because you just wanted him to, you wanted it to work for him. It's just so sad. So sad to see the way it ended.
Yeah, no, I really feel for him, but obviously he just about managed to make a full recovery. I think he said to us, you know, he still feels it occasionally, but you know, it's not at all life affecting. So,
no,
good to hear. But I know this might be a little bit of a biased question, considering you've got a picture of it on the wall. But do you have a particular best memory from Bolton? Your time at Bolton. let me guess.
I mean, yeah, obviously the Blackburn game's a great memory for me with the celebration. But I'm gonna say as well. I've got loads. It's just hard to pick. You know, like the next best one to that, the celebration.
Mm-hmm. The Birmingham one's probably up there as well.
The semi-final win. I think the quarter-final win. I think that just summed it up. The never say die attitude. The like my ball to Chungy and his header was just. Do you know what I mean? It's just like a great memory to have. And obviously, I lived in the area as well, so I knew I was going to get stick. From all the fans.
I was about to say, I bet your employers appreciate hearing this.
So yeah, I would have to say that's got to be the next best memory, is that one, the FA Cup game in the quarterfinals. That result was just in the last, the dying minutes of it, scoring that goal, yeah. So definitely the 3-2 win at Birmingham.
Good stuff. In relation to that, can you disclose whether or not it was just a hopeful punt from the halfway line, or did you fully intentionally for it to land on a Kev's head?
Defenders are always going to lie and said it was a well passed. It was. Let's just get the ball forward as quick as we can and try and score. Nah, to be fair, I was. If you look at most of my clips over my career, they are. I've got that defined ball where you try and pick the players out. I just thought it was a well-weighted pass for Chungy. So I'm going to take that as it was a fantastic assist.
Good stuff. I'll let you have it.
Thank you.
For the sake of the goal. But yeah, what else have we got? Did you prefer playing left-back or centre-back? Obviously, I know you've just spoken about how much it helped your game in the last few years, but did you have a preference between the two?
I love left back, just because of the fact it was my as a kid growing up until the later stages of my career. Yes, I loved playing centre half towards the end, and it prolonged my career and made me a different player. But no, I'm going to say left back was I love playing left back.
Good shot and stuff. Yeah, you definitely made that position your own at the time. So yeah, don't blame you for that at all. You've obviously mentioned the likes of Ronaldo and somehow Sean Wright Phillips in the same sentence is going in there.
Yeah.
What's the best player you've ever played with and against in your career?
Well, because we're talking about Bolton, I'm going to talk about Bolton. So the best players I've played with, I'm going to say Gary Cahill, Kevin Davis, Jack Wiltshire. So them three for me were standout, like with the quality that they had. And you knew that Gary and Jack were going to go on to have fantastic careers like they've had. And obviously Kev, I mean, you can speak as highly as you can of him. The geezer's an absolute legend. So I love my time with him. And he was very underrated. He was an underrated striker in my eyes. And then the players I played against, obviously there's been so many. But if there was one standout one, yeah, it would be Beckham or Ronaldo out of the two of them.
Oh, of course, Beckham as well, yeah.
Just because of the fact that you were playing wide right, they were playing wide right, and you were always thinking of a different game plan to play against them. So yeah, I would say that them two, Beckham and Ronaldo, were always the biggest challenges to try and play against.
Great shots. Finally, Joe Conway's asking, do you think Owen Coyle got the best out of that squad as he possibly could have?
No, not at all. Which was a shame, because there was some real good quality in it, and I just think he could have done a lot better with that group of players that he had there, that he had in front of him.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I can completely see your point of view on that.
I think we all agree there, unfortunately.
Yeah, too reliant on camaraderie over actual tactical planning.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I can completely appreciate that. As you say, obviously you had that fallout with him at the end, which is obviously disappointing to hear, but it's obviously just, I think everyone agrees with you at the end of the day on that. So, yeah. But yeah, no, brilliant. Thank you very much for asking the Twitter questions, and I'll hand you back to Tom for the close. Cheers.
No worries.
Yeah, I think what I would say before we finish here, Paul, is do you have a message for the Bolton fans? Because I think there was quite a few tweets that we got for this. I don't know if you've been checking. There were very, very positive memories of your time at the club.
No, I love my time. Obviously, I didn't get a chance to say goodbye. So I'd like to thank the fans for all their support over the 3 years that I was there. It's a fantastic club, a great family club. And I really enjoyed my time there. My family did as well. When they come up and watch the games, they felt welcome. The club, again, will always be in my heart because I played for them. And just to stay strong at this moment in time and stay safe, and the football season will hopefully get going. And I'm hoping a lot more positive times ahead for Bolton, where we'll see them back at the top one day.
Yeah, we echo that completely, Paul. We're sort of hoping against hope that they will come sooner rather than later. Thank you very much for talking to us today. It's been a real, real pleasure to speak to you.
No worries, fellas. Thank you very much for your time. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
No problem at all. So if there's nothing left to say, everyone, thank you very much for listening to Line of Vienna Street Podcast, episode 143, with special guest Paul Robinson. So say goodbye, Will.
Goodbye, Will.
Say goodbye, James.
Goodbye, James.
Say goodbye, Paul.
Goodbye, Paul.
And it's goodbye from me. C'est la vie.